the nation's capital. This is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Today's program is on recidivism reduction in the state of Iowa. We have a continuing series of programs where we interview states about the fact that they've been able to reduce recidivism. Everybody is involved in reentry nowadays, but the trick is, can you reduce recidivism? Can you reduce the rate of return of people coming back into the prison system, thereby saving the states literally tens to hundreds of millions of dollars, or saving taxpayers from further victimization? And we have two guests with us today from the state of Iowa. Letty Prell, she's the director of research, which is the Iowa Department of Corrections, www.doc.state, state.ia.us for the website. And Jerry Bartoff, he is the deputy director of offender services for the Iowa Department of Corrections. Again, the same web address, www.doc.state.ia.us. And to Letty and Jerry, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thank you, Len.
Hi, Len.
Okay, before getting into the program, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing, believe it or not, some commercials. One, actually not commercial, but just announcements. The American Probation and Parole Association, which I'm a proud member, what they want us to do is to remind everybody throughout the country of the leadership, of the sacrifice of literally thousands of individuals, not just in the United States, but around the world, who are out there in our streets protecting our safety, and to acknowledge them doing an upcoming parole and probation officers week in July, but we're starting early. We ask everybody to, again, remember parole and probation agents, what we call community supervision officers here in the city of Washington, D.C. The website for the American Probation and Parole Association is www.appa-net.org. Also, what they've like, my people here have asked me to do is to focus on the work of the National Reentry Resource Center, the fact that they're putting out some really wonderful materials lately in terms of cutting edge, state-of-the-art material research on this whole issue of reentry. They are funded by the Office of Justice Programs of the United States Department of Justice, and their website is www.nationalreentryresourcecenter.org, www.nationalreentryresourcecenter.org. Back to our program, to Letty Prell and to Jerry. Welcome again to D.C. Public Safety. Letty, let's start off a little bit about the reductions in recidivism in the state of Iowa. We've had a pretty good reduction in overall recidivism for the last couple years, but it's larger for some groups. We're talking in the pre-show about, say, for mentally ill offenders and for women, there have been some significant reductions. So why don't you start off with the larger reductions in recidivism, and then we're going to go over to Jerry and get a sense as to why these things are happening. So, Letty, why don't you start us off?
Yes. The people returned to prison who were released in fiscal year 2004, that's our prior year that we are comparing our newer data with, for those people who were tracked for 3 years following release, their return rate to prison was 34%.
Mm-hmm.
Our more recent group, fiscal year 2007 releasees who were followed through 2010, their return rate to prison overall was 32%. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a 2 percentage point drop, which, you know, sometimes just indicates statistical noise. But when we drill into the subgroups, and by the way, these are subgroups that we have been specifically targeting some special efforts with, we find that their recidivism rates have dropped more, and that has pulled down the overall recidivism rate.
And, you know, that's interesting because there are large drops for the mentally ill category and for women and for some other groups, correct? And much larger than the 2% in the overall reductions.
Yes, yes. And you've mentioned the mentally ill, so let's just start with them. We were looking at the return rate to prison for chronically mentally ill offenders, for men and women separately because their groups are very different. For female offenders who are chronically mentally ill, their return rate to prison was reduced from 45% to 29%.
Now that's huge.
That is huge.
That's a very big reduction.
Yes, and not not explained by statistical noise like a 2% drop can be.
Right.
For male offenders, the same thing. For chronically mentally ill male offenders, their recidivism rates were reduced from 52% to 41%.
Again, a larger
and see,
drop.
Now, yes, and now we've also reduced the disparity in return rates between the chronically mentally ill and the not chronically mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a difference, but the difference isn't as huge as it was in FY04.
And Jerry Bartroff, this is as a result of programs specifically aimed at these particular groups, correct?
Well, I think so, and I think whenever you look at reentry and its impact on reducing recidivism, I think there needs to be a recognition that those things just don't happen because you focus some effort. I think that there's some historical things that have happened in the Department of Corrections that have led us to this point where we're able to impact those numbers successfully. So I would suggest that one of our strengths in Iowa is that we have a very strong and vibrant community-based correction system, which works very collaboratively and, I may say, even intimately with the Department of Corrections. We also share one database, so as offenders move through the corrections continuum when they're first placed on correctional supervision, we record all offender movement, case management, interventions, risk assessments, all on one database. So folks in CBC and the institutions have an opportunity to share information instead of creating a new case file when an offender moves from one jurisdiction to another. So I think that historical piece has benefited us today. I also think one of the historical decisions that we made was in 2000 when we implemented evidence-based practices and community-based corrections program and focusing on those elements we know with interventions that work with the outcome being reducing risk, which then reduces recidivism, which makes our community safer. So I think if you look at our community-based corrections system, our ability to share data together and for Letty to be able to report out on that data to help guide our decision-making, and our commitment to evidence-based practices, all those things have coalesced into affecting that bottom line that we know is most important to us, how many people enter our system leave and don't come back again, because we think that equates to fewer victims and safer communities.
Well, it's very well put, Jerry. I couldn't have done it better myself. The whole concept is to save the state of Iowa money and to save the citizens of Iowa victimization. And so it's a win-win situation for everybody. But if you take a look around the country, you're going to find states that are cutting back on these programs. So the states may say to themselves, fine, I buy into evidence-based practices. I buy into the fact that when we did the interview with Kentucky's at their lowest rate of recidivism in 10 years. I've listened to the program on Iowa, and fine, the good people of Iowa have convinced me once again that evidence-based practices work. We simply don't have the money. This is other states speaking. We're in a dire jam in terms of our own budget. We have to cut from someplace, and so it's pretty easy to cut programs for prison inmates. So I think that's the dichotomy. What are the dynamics in Iowa that has allowed you to put programs into place?
Well, I think we're struggling with those issues that you just very well described, Lynn. But I think one of the things that we're doing is recognizing that evidence-based practices and being able to get the outcomes from our data system tells us what's working and what's not working. So one of the things we've done after we committed to ensuring that evidence-based practices were guiding our work is that we looked at every intervention that we offer in the state of Iowa, both in the prisons and the institutions. We developed an EBP steering committee, and we had a group of folks who were experts in evidence-based practices and principles who went out to every district and every institution and assessed and evaluated all of our interventions. As a result of that, we identified those interventions as needing improvement, promising, or Letty, what was the other one?
Excellent.
It needs improvement. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Well, let's put it this way. When we started this process, we found after that process, 31% of our programs were rated promising or excellent, meaning Well, over two-thirds needed improvement. Well, now we've been, that became a performance measure, by the way, and people have been improving programs, or actually we've also discontinued some programs, so that more recently we find that 41% of our programs now are scoring promising or excellent according to these evidence-based
practices. And that is amazing, because that's exactly what the criminological literature, that's exactly what the reentry experts ask states to do, is to take a hard look at what it is they're doing to figure out what's working and what's not working based upon the best available evidence. And then to go back and to intervene and to tweak the programs to improve these programs based upon best practices. I mean, we throw out this word best practice over and over and over again, and I'm not quite sure it means all that much to everybody. All you're trying to do is to take what you're doing and to make it better and discard what doesn't work, right?
Right, and engaging staff in the process, and it's also a valuable component of utilizing our resources effectively. So when we went through that process, there are several programs that we were investing staff and resources in that we said, these aren't working the way that we want them to, so let's focus our resources on those that do.
Excellent, excellent.
Now, it's making those tough decisions along the way as well.
Letty, let me ask. I mean, the stuff that you sent me before the program was very nice and to me pretty crystal clear in terms of the stats that you all have produced. Once again, most states won't do that self-examination. Most states won't do. I mean, there's a growing number of states that are, but it's still really interesting when a state like Iowa comes up with graphics that you produce that are so easy to understand and so easy to comprehend. I mean, even that's a compliment to the state of Iowa.
Well, it's also been a challenge to me. The department has challenged me to not only make information available, but to make information available and speak English in the process, and communicate clearly as we can. We put out these 1- and 2-page data download issues, and I do that in conjunction with the executive assistant to the director, Kurt Smith, who makes sure that when everything is said and done, it's in English.
But do you understand how rare that is? I mean, I've worked with empiricists my entire career, and getting people from the empirical community to make give a straightforward answer to a straightforward question is sometimes like pulling teeth. So you certainly have crossed that bridge. I mean, I just wanted to compliment you on the materials that you sent me, because they were pretty easy to understand. And there were also different newspaper articles in the state of Iowa, and we'll put those on the show notes. And we'll put some of Letty's materials in the show notes to give you an idea as to what I'm talking about. So it'll talk about the reductions in recidivism in the state of Iowa and some of the reports that Letty puts out. What is?
Yeah, and Len, if I could just comment a little bit, I think that those that data that Letty shares with us, we push down to the practitioner level. Mm-hmm. Because I think an important component of this is if you have data, and data tells you to certain things, that you make decisions based on what that data is telling you. So I think that the way that Letty is able to take some kind of complex issues and make them understandable for folks then translates into practitioners following through with what the data tells us is most effective.
Yep. I could go on for 5 years about my issue with the research community, but I won't. We're going to stop there.
Okay.
Letty, what is the bottom line behind all of your numbers? So you've had it's a 2% drop in terms of the recent years, but larger for some groups, mentally ill for women, for some men who are mentally ill. That's a result of specifically programming to that particular group. Are there any other groups involved in reductions?
Yes, African-American offenders.
Right.
They, in fiscal year 2004, the prior year, they had the highest return rate to prison of any other race or ethnic group. It was 43% compared to 32% for white non-Hispanic.
Again, big drop.
Yes, there was a big drop. Overall recidivism for African Americans went from 43% to 40%, but the largest drop was in the return rate due to new conviction, where we saw a drop from 29% to 22%.
Again, good drops.
And again, greatly narrowed the gap in return rates between blacks and whites. created a less disparate, that's one of our goals, is to create a less disparate correction system.
When you talk about the issue of new convictions, set it up, either one of you, in terms of the reasons that people come back to the prison system, we call technical violations, which I have a hard time with in some ways, because if you refuse to make restitution to your victim, that could be a technical violation, or if you refuse to go to drug treatment. But in any event, I understand the controversy with technical violations. People either come back to prison for technical violations or new convictions, correct?
Yes.
And
yes, those are the two reasons.
And so the new convictions is down, which means that crime is down.
That's exactly right. And not only that, but these are the kinds of crimes that lead to imprisonment.
Right.
So they're the more serious crimes. So when we can say that serious crime is down, that's really significant and translates into real public safety.
I'm going to reintroduce both of you right now because we're quickly halfway through the program. These programs go by so quickly. Letty Prell, Director of Research, Iowa Department of Corrections, www.doc.state.ia.us. Jerry Bartroff, he is the Deputy Director of Offender Services, Iowa Department of Corrections, at the same website, www.doc.state.ia.us. Okay, so for the second half of the program, the fact that, you know, does anybody understand, except those of us in the reentry field, as to the significance as to what you all have been able to do, or are you laboring in obscurity? You've got a couple newspaper articles about the reductions in Iowa. I've seen some coverage from the reentry community about the reductions in Iowa. Does anybody else understand what's happening in the state of Iowa?
I think so. One of the things we benefited from is since the federal government started to issue grants to promote reentry activities, we first participated in the Savory grant in 2005. We participated in two PRI grants, one with an urban focus, and because Iowa is a mostly rural state, another PRI grant that focused on reentry in the rural areas. And we are also involved in a technical assistance program through the National Institute of Corrections, which brings folks from the Urban Institute and the Center for Effective Public Policy to Iowa on a fairly a routine basis to help us move forward in adopting the Transition from Prison to Community initiative as our reentry model in Iowa. So I think our work through the grant process, through our involvement with NIC and then with the Center and the Urban Institute, we've received feedback from them that Iowa's doing are the things that jurisdictions need to be doing, and there's always some work to do. There's always a lot of improvements we need to make, but we rely on the expertise of those folks to help us move forward.
Right, but I mean, this is in the reentry community. Somebody said, hey, Len, you need to do a program about Iowa. They're doing significant things out there. They're doing a lot of evidence-based ideas. They really are going through an analysis of what they do it and how they do it. They're really being bold in terms of that self-analysis. You know, it's very hard for government agencies to turn that evil eye on themselves and ask critical questions as to whether or not we're really serving the citizens by reducing recidivism. So, you know, the reentry community understands this. Does the larger group of citizens in the state of Iowa understand the significance as to what you're doing?
I think that there is always room to tell the good stories, because, as you know, often in our business, it's the high-profile crime that creates people's perspective of what the criminal justice system or the correction systems does.
That's exactly
we
right.
We have several success stories that I think that we need to continue to tell people, because I do think it has impacted community safety. One of the things that I can say that we're fortunate in the state of Iowa is that we have gotten a whole lot of support from the executive branch of state government. In July of 2009, the governor issued an executive order which established the Ex-Offender Reentry Coordinating Council. The primary goal of that council is to integrate successful offender reentry principles and practices in state agencies and communities, resulting in partnerships that enhance offender safety and successful reintegration.
That's great.
The group was chaired by our director and also the director of IWD, and we think employment and opportunities for offenders to receive an education, to find a job and maintain a job, that's a huge reentry success indicator.
We just did a radio show on correctional education, so that was the show that preceded yours. So what is the lesson in all of this, either Jerry or Letty, in terms of, you know, what do we tell people around the country, what do we tell people here in Washington, D.C., in terms of what works? Because we have, I mean, what we've done here is focus specifically on the mentally ill and broken it down by male and female. We've talked about African-American offenders, and we talked about good reductions there. What are we talking about? And so I'm assuming that you have implemented programs specifically for mentally ill offenders. What does that consist of?
Yes. Go ahead, Letty.
It started with John Baldwin's, Director John Baldwin established focus groups in 2007. And focus groups got together on exactly around the issue of mental health, mentally ill offenders and mental health reentry. And I'll let Jerry take over because he's really been spearheading a lot of that.
Yes, and we had previously received a federal grant that provided a mental health reentry pilot project that involved folks that are going to be supervising offenders in the community and case managers and offenders and mental health professionals in the institution doing this case management process together. Because I think what often happens with mentally ill offenders as they go through the system and return to the community, you've got several people with their hands in the offender's pot. And we were thinking that if we have a consolidated case management process, that we will be able to impact that recidivism rate.
Okay,
and indeed, that is
to the congressional staffer, consolidated case management means what?
Mm-hmm. That means that historically, and one of the reasons I think the Ex-Offender Reentry Coordinating Council is important, that IWD has a case file for an offender who's left the institution, goes back. The Department of Human Services does. Education may have a focus. There are several different agencies that are kind of helping the offender navigate what they need to be doing in the community to be successful. And we're saying that instead of having a separate case plan from every agency that is working with the offender, if we can consolidate that case management process so that the offender is only accountable to one case plan, that people that are working with the offender wrap themselves around the offender, the expectations for the offender and the services that can be provided are clear. And we just think it's a better process for both the offender and the agencies that are working with the offender to provide effective service.
Now, that's understood. If for the programs in the state of Iowa in terms of the Division of Correction, the Department of Correction, are they getting good, solid programming, individualized programming, focusing on their own mental illness while they're locked up?
Yeah, and we're also, again, going back to some comments I made about community-based corrections, we've also developed a pilot reentry mental health courts where we're looking at people before they come to the prison system and making some determination whether or not their mental illness could be better managed in the community, because we think one of the evidence-based principles is keeping people as close to their natural community as possible. So not only are we trying to provide those services to people that are incarcerated, but we also want to try to provide those services for people at the very entrance point into the criminal justice system. And some of those people should be diverted back to the mental health system, because the further you enter the criminal justice system, the more difficult it becomes for people to receive the services they need and then hook up with those resources when they leave.
Right. And there we're talking about lower-level offenders, diverting them off into treatment so they don't go into the prison system to begin with. And then you're talking about treatment in the prison system,
correct,
and that treatment being carried out seamlessly into the community, and everybody's operating off of one plan in terms of their own plans.
Exactly.
Do I have it?
Mm-hmm. You've got it.
Okay. What about drug treatment? What about, you mentioned before, employment and vocational programs, educational programs and drug treatment. Mm-hmm. What about all that?
Mm-hmm. We think that there's a myriad of interventions that we need to have available for us to use with offenders. And so we spend a whole lot of time with front-end risk assessments to both identify risk levels but also to identify needs. And then making sure that our interventions that reduce risk and address those criminogenic needs are the programs we offer both in the institutions and in community-based corrections.
Now, most states don't have sufficient slots, numbers, treatment slots, people to do this.
That's where I'm coming next. Our need for treatment slots in those various different areas of criminogenic needs does not nearly the capacity does not meet the need.
Right.
So one of the things that we're forced to do is to focus our resources on that risk population that we have the most likelihood of impacting. So we focus a lot of our resources, our core programs, our cognitive programs, on those offenders that are moderate to high risk offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a targeting piece that comes in there that's important, too, and consistent with what the evidence tells us. So we wish we could provide the programming that we need for all offenders, but at sometimes, and especially with low-risk offenders, you can actually make them worse by forcing them to go through some of those programs.
Well, number one, there's no state in the United States that has all the resources that it needs. If you take a look at drug treatment, if you take a look at other sorts of interventions, it's not unusual to see 10% of the population being treated, 15% of the population. I'm talking about the population who needs it, not the overall population.
Right.
If we're saying, I think it's safe to say that somewhere between 60 to 80% of every offender in every correctional system in this country, whether it's yours or ours, has a serious history of substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So even we're federally funded, we can do 25% out of mm-hmm. our own funds of that particular population, which means mm-hmm. we, like you, have to target. So I'm not trying to put
right.
the state of Iowa on the spot. I'll put ourselves on the spot. You can't do everything for everybody. That's why they're
right.
saying target the more difficult and serious offenders.
And right. we start out at the front end with doing a whole lot of assessment work and parsing that population of substance abusers into people who need intensive inpatient, people who would better be served by outpatient, people who have received treatment before and need relapse. And so looking at a continuum of care and using assessments to say, where should we put this offender based on his needs and his assessment in those critical beds that we know we don't have enough of? So doing that front-end assessment work is huge with trying to then match the offender to the intervention that meets that offender's needs and reduce the risk.
And, Letty, you're on the opposite end of the continuum, taking a hard look at all these different programs and figuring out, you know what, we don't have all the money we wish we had, so let's do away with the programs that aren't performing as well, and let's put additional funds and resources into the programs that are doing well. So the research part of it is an extraordinarily big piece of reentry programming in terms of state-of-the-art practices. Right, Letty?
Yes, and our executive from the very top on down is committed to basing these tough decisions on the data. And as speaking of risk, listeners in other states and jurisdictions, you know, the Iowa data really show that don't be afraid to treat that high-risk offender because we have shown the largest drops in recidivism rates and in, you know, getting the bang for your buck out of treating those high-risk offenders. We have a dynamic risk assessment. We use the LSIR, the Level of Service Inventory Revised, that was developed in Canada. And when we reassess for risk, we find that there's some score drop that is happening. And we had a research partner. She got her PhD doing this study. And we said, well, we're seeing these score drops. Does that translate to lower recidivism? And her research says that yes, that for that highest risk group, a 10% drop in their assessment score means a 6% reduction in recidivism.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the largest recidivism reduction of any of the risk groups. It's at the highest level. And that's really important because at that highest level of risk, you see a disproportionate number of mentally ill, a disproportionate number of African Americans. So this exactly translates to the targeted treatment we've been doing for these subgroups.
All right, final minute of the program, so you guys are going to have to be concise. What are the lessons for everybody else? So, for the congressional staffers and the other people in other states listening to this program, it's to do what?
I'll go first. I think the first thing to recognize is that incarceration and reentry is not just a criminal justice issue. It's a community safety issue, and that other agencies and the community needs to be involved with this if we're going to be able to make our community safer.
Letty?
Improve programs that you have, get rid of programs that aren't working, and treat the high-risk offender.
I really appreciate the summation. Both of you, I think we did an extraordinarily good job of explaining something that is very complex, and hopefully other states and jurisdictions will benefit from what you've said today. Letty Prell, Director of Research for the Iowa Department of Corrections. Again, www.doc.state.ia.us. I won't repeat that again for Jerry Bartroff. He is the Deputy Director of Offender Services, again, for the Iowa Department of Corrections. Big drops in recidivism. Again, congratulations to you both. Again, a reminder, as we said at the beginning of the program, the American Probation and Parole Association, www.appa-net.org, is talking about honoring parole and probation agents, community supervision officers throughout the country, and for that matter, throughout the world. Check out their website in terms of activities coming up, and also, once again, the National Reentry Resource Center, funded by the Bureau of Justice Assistance for the U.S. Department of Justice, www.nationalreentryresourcecenter.org. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. I am your host, Leonard Sipes. Listen for us next time as we explore another very important topic in our criminal justice system. Please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.